best team of the modern era.
This is AFL Exchange on afl.com.au.
Thank you, Craig, and thank you for joining us wherever you are right around the world. A huge round eight coming up, an AFL Exchange at you again. Andrew Lowther in the driver's seat for Matty Thompson this week, who's taking a well-earned break. The ever-angry Drew Petrie is with us, as always. We'll get to that in a moment. But we've dragged in off the interchange bench one of our favourites. He was superb last year, Drew, when he filled
yeah,
in.
Yeah, he was.
He brings the big ticket. He is the big man in media right across the game. Peter, the Doyen Ryan. Pete?
It is a great pleasure to be here with you too.
I think I read what you wrote there.
I heard exactly what you said. Brilliant.
And a special guest coming up too. We're trying to get Brent Stanton's mother on the phone after Drew was... there was a lot of news last round. And Friday night footy, the microscope goes on the game and the two teams involved. And Drew, you played a fantastic game. We're going to ignore that.
As you would.
And we're going to talk about your what we thought was captured... on the videotape at in the AFL media headquarters and highlighted by Gary Lyon and Damien Barrett on Access All Areas. If you haven't caught it, here's what Drew had to say.
Yes, Drew.
He's a diver this time.
Okay, time back on. Thank you.
I wanted to get it out of the way, Drew. So it was a free kick to Brent Stanton.
It was.
A hot part of the game.
It was a pretty hot game all night.
Absolutely it was. Have you got an apology to him? That's incredible thing to say. One of the biggest insults.
Hey, Doyen,
don't you gang up.
Just because you're sitting
in his chair, don't mean you've got to turn into him.
It was a free kick, I thought.
That's an outrageous
call. You were right in his back.
Yeah, I did. I threw him out of the venue, didn't I?
Can I ask you seriously?
Yeah.
If it hadn't have been Brett Stanton, if it hadn't have been Jake Melsham or any Essendon player, were you just in the mood to yell, you diver?
Yeah, I would have.
So I'm not picking on Brent at all.
When you're in the moment, you know, you get a bit, your blood boils and you're,
And did you expect the umpire to just note that down in the notebook, you know, number five, Ray, Essendon diver?
Yeah, no, not at all. I didn't think Ray would pay any attention to it, which he didn't need to, but, yeah.
Have you ever been called anything insulting?
Well, I have. I received a free kick in the last quarter, which, having looked back at the replay, it did look as though I'd staged. But I felt like there was more contact than what the replay showed.
So Joe Danaher put his elbow into the middle of your back.
Yeah, there was contact there, but it wasn't as...
Not much, Drew.
Strong breeze. Now that I've seen the replay, he's a strong boy. Haven't you seen the size of Joe Danaher? He throws blokes around and he threw me around.
I noticed how strong he was when he lost his feet about four times in the last quarter.
Copped it on Twitter. I've copped it from plenty of Essendon fans. Yeah, you know, at Drew Petrie called Stanton a diver. So then what do you call Lindsay Thomas? Drew Petrie, just so you know, I have never seen Stanton dive for a free in over 10 years. Lindsay Thomas is what we call a veteran at it, blah, blah, blah. So I had heaps of good feedback from the Essendon faithful after the game.
I reckon your dive was as bad as Stanton's. Just putting it out there with respect.
Okay, all right. I've been cornered. It didn't look great, but I didn't intend it to look that bad. No one does. No. But
I'm loath to jump to your defence, Drew. But it's gamesmanship, isn't it? And the discussion, which we'll have in just a moment as well, about head high tackles.
Yeah.
If you're playing within the rules and the rules are to your advantage, then why not?
Yeah. The free kick was there.
I mean, Drew didn't force anyone to give him the free kick either.
Exactly. I did what I did, and then the umpires saw fit that it was a free kick, so. I'll take it.
Just while we're on you, we want to talk about some bigger issues in the game, but you're ticking along okay, personally. We don't often talk about your own form, apart from when it's no good, but you had ankle surgery end of last season.
Yep.
You had a restricted pre-season.
Yep.
I would imagine, and I haven't spoken to you about it, but I'd imagine you must be pretty happy with the way you're going along.
I think when you start to become happy with yourself and happy with your form, that's a danger sign. The red light starts to flash in your own mind. Yeah, I'm not comfortable is a bad word too, but
would you be confident?
My form in the last 2 weeks has been good.
Yep.
You're only one bad game away from it all turning to you know what again. So you've got to be nervous. You've got to be on the edge. You've just got to be. Always driven to perform better each week, and that's what I have in the forefront of my mind.
So your voice was picked up on the umpire mics on Friday night footy, and this became a talking point, not because of you, but because of Brendan Goddard, who was
caught some
well,
a couple of expletives
in the heat of the moment. Polite. No, that was good. I'm sure your mum and dad were very pleased with that. Drew, and very good effort for a Ballarat boy too, because usually Ballarat conversation is peppered with F-words.
Foul mouth. Talking about, usually talking about our Bendigo mates.
Yeah, they are so effing lucky to come from such a good effing place. I know what you say. Oh, it's effing raining again. It's effing 3 degrees. I know how it goes. Why can't we have an effing education in this effing place? Yeah. I know how it goes, Drew. So what do you make of it? Because there has been debate, and if you haven't caught it, wherever you're listening around the world, Brendan Goddard came out and said how upset he was, that he'd been stiffed a little bit by the Channel 7 production
stitched
team.
Stitched up.
What do you make of it, Drew?
No, I'm okay with the umpire mics. I think there's more upside to it than the negatives. The onus is on the broadcaster to prevent the bad language. And when they go live after there's been a free kick paid, if it's a contentious free kick in a tight game, you're going to get passionate players responding certain ways, and that's what Brendan did, and they elected to have the volume up when he said what he did. So I think it's a tool that the umpires probably use as well for their training, and then... we were speaking earlier before we started tonight about the sounds of the game and how Andrew Swallow was mic'd up by Channel 7 on Friday night as well. And then there was a package put on the AFL players webpage, which was outstanding. So I think absolute upside, Pete, I'm sure. As a footy journo, you'd love hearing those insights.
It definitely gave me a different appreciation of the way Andrew Swallow operates. He seems such a mild-mannered, you know, butter wouldn't melt in his mouth character, and he was obviously encouraging to his players, speaking to Jared Wade on the bench, but also demanding when he spoke to Ben Jacobs after that free kick right on half-time.
Which you agreed with how Andrew responded to Ben's.
Well, I did say, didn't I, that I thought Ben was a bit stiff, and I thought maybe Andrew could have mentioned Luke's handball to Ben potentially. But anyway, it was good to see that he's obviously got a relationship with Ben Jacobs where he can be direct.
Yep.
Would you have been embarrassed if you were in Brendan Goddard's position?
Only the fact that his swearing was picked up, slightly. But the fact that he showed passion and was anger, and I think you want your teammates to be that way when you're playing footy.
I don't think anyone. And I was watching with my 10-year-old, and I just don't think it worried. And I had to explain it, but it wasn't a drama at all.
Mm.
It's just the reality of footy. Yeah.
So, do you think that? Whoever is broadcasting the match, Pete, should keep that language from our screen. So, if they can,
ideally, yes. But when a mistake happens like that, well, you just explain it or let it go. I don't think that the broadcaster should deliberately let that language go to air.
Would that be the first time that your 10-year-old's been exposed to that language? I don't mean that from you. I'm not being smart.
No, of course not, because you take them out in the real world. That's just the reality of it. But you try to teach them the places where it's appropriate and not appropriate. That's probably, if it's going to be appropriate, one of the more appropriate places to use that language.
Yep.
One of the other big talking points of the weekend surrounded key forwards, in particular Travis Cloak, Pete, who I know you keep a very close eye on. Nathan Buckley, very upset after the game about the free kicks that he thinks Travis deserves. Can't remember the exact quote now, but he gets a terrible run from the umpires.
Was there a please explain Bucks given to Bucks at all about his comments? He didn't.
No. Wayne Campbell, in fact, said that he was quite nice. Not nice, but he thought Bucks was okay in the way that he delivered the message, and he was happy to catch up with him because he thought it was a broad description of how Travis is treated rather than...
So it was interesting, wasn't it? The umpire's boss, Wayne Campbell, comes out on Monday and addresses Nathan Buckley's comments straight away and says, in fact, Nathan was right. And we've spoken.
Okay.
Yeah. My cynical view, and I don't think it's as orchestrated as this, but it was done well. Travis Cloak went from someone who could not kick the side of a barn to a working class hero within about 3 days, because Bucks suddenly said he had the weight of the world on his shoulders and he was getting a poor deal from the umpires.
Do you think he gets a poor deal?
As most key forwards do. I don't think it's any worse than any other key forward.
Some get it better than others, and we'll discuss that in just a moment. But, Drew, do you? Playing nearly all your career as a key forward, I think no footy fan who watches more than a game a weekend would ever think that key forwards get it easy.
No, I only got to see that free kick Petrie got in the last quarter when Joe Danaher touched him.
What end of the ground was Drew playing?
I was up the other end at that particular moment. I think people go to the footy to they want to see a contest. They want to see physical attack from both sides, but we want to see goals. So any I think the rules, the current rules, you know, defenders can't chop arms. If defenders aren't facing the footy, we want to be able to encourage our forwards and big scores kicked throughout each game. So I haven't seen Travis Cloke's game from last week against Richmond, but the forwards are looked after these days, but I think that's rightly so because we go to see goals scored.
Well, I think some of them might be, but I think on the majority, the really good ones, in particular Lance Franklin, gets a horrible deal.
Yeah.
Mm. And it seems the question I always ask myself is why is it that the great midfielders tend to get looked after? Ablett, Judd, Selwood.
Mm.
And the great forwards don't. They have to work harder for their kicks.
Because every free kick potentially results in a goal and it panics the umpire.
So you think it's a psychological thing?
From the umpires, I would imagine that subconsciously you weigh up your decision more if you're giving a player a shot on goal, or shot at goal, sorry, than if you're giving him a free kick in the middle.
So this caused a flurry of activity in our office on Monday morning. Our producer, Jack, who I think was... It was quite unfortunate your attack on him last week, Jerome. We had some strong feedback about it as well. You called him jerk a couple of times.
Lucky that's all I called him.
You like your zinger so much that you went with it a couple of times. Yeah. People who listened,
you called him Brent Stanton at one stage. It was disappointing.
Well, he came in an absolute flurry. He wanted to have a look at some of these free kicks.
I think it says more about your staff who sympathised with Jack the next day.
Yeah, there was some strong feedback in the AFL media offices about your attack on Jack. But I think he's got your back, Drew.
He does. It's confirmed by the stats that he's passed on to us.
So we've had a look at key forward statistics for free kicks four since 2011. Drew, the sheet of paper's just in front of you there. Would you just give us a bit of an overview?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you an overview. So what I've done is I've looked at the last 50 games that each player has played. So the players that we're going to speak about are... Travis Cloke, Josh Kennedy, Jeremy Cameron, Lance Franklin, Jared Roughhead, Jack Riewoldt, and Matthew Pavlich.
Anyone else, Drew?
Number 20 for North Melbourne.
Yeah. Not on my list.
Well, there's another one in front of you there, Drew, that I'd like you to have a look at.
Oh, that list.
The one that Jack's brought to the table, not the one you have.
Well, I think let's start off with my list. All right, so Lance Franklin in his last 50 games has received 72 free kicks.
Yep.
Next, followed by Josh Kennedy's received 60.
This is real junk time stuff, Pete.
Travis Cloke's 59.
Disgrace.
Jack Riewoldt, Matty Pavlich 55. Jack Riewoldt 52. Jared Roughhead 44. And Jeremy Cameron 38. So Buddy Franklin leads the list in the last 50 games, receiving the most free kicks, which is 72. So you reckon he gets a raw deal
by
this list? Free kicks against? Well, he gives them. I did see a chart that someone tweeted me. He
leads the AFL
for free kicks against.
Right.
I didn't realise it was that extreme.
So we've broken it down year by year. And you won't come to the table with it, Drew. So I might ask Peter Ryan to come to the table with some of the stats, Pete, since 2011.
Well,
so Travis Cloke's got the most free kicks of any key forward this year.
Yep.
With 11 from 7 games.
I don't want to go through it in great detail, except to say that one name stands out, doesn't it? Mm. Very rarely does a key forward get over 30 free kicks a season. Would that be fair to say, Drew, based on what
over 30? I suppose if you're getting one and a half a game, that'd be about right.
Barely. So, Drew Petrie, 2014, 32 free kicks.
So, led the league.
Led the league for key forwards.
Well, we haven't gone through every club.
Yeah, 2013.
There might be other key forwards.
2013,
from other sides that you've
44. Next closest, 28.
Averaging two a game in 2013.
Next closest, 28.
So he led the league in.
Led the league.
Right.
2012.
He shouldn't.
37. Equal with the Budwar, but well ahead of the next, which was Jack Riewoldt on 27.
So equal in the league again.
Yep. And then the final one, 2011.
It couldn't be right. He surely didn't get the most.
41.
Now, you haven't got a mic, Jack. You're pretty close to me calling you what I did last week. You haven't fudged these numbers, have you?
The darling of the AFL.
I mean, so
it's no wonder you're on the AFL's payroll, Drew. I didn't realise it was on the field as
I'm
well.
I'm just doing this quick add up here. So we spoke about the 50 games for the other blokes. So what's that? 77. Right.
Yep.
That's it, Jack. proper numbers. So 77 free kicks in my last 50 games, which is more than Buddy Franklin's 72.
And for Collingwood fans out there, I said Travis Clarke has got the most for 2015. Buddy Franklin has with 13 from seven games. Drews, just bringing it up pretty close to Buddy, though. Nine this year. So you'd be disappointed with that,
Drew. Is there anything that you do that you can help out the other key forwards that actually...
What are you doing?
My defenders just hold me so badly.
On that audio, pointing out to the umpires who, you know, dives,
you know,
or...
I reckon out of all the key forwards you've listed there, I'd complain the least to the umpires.
Maybe that's a secret.
Because I hadn't thought of this.
But I didn't think that was working. I thought I was getting a raw deal as well, but all these numbers.
I hadn't thought of this, Pete, up until now, when I heard this audio from this is Razor Ray Chamberlain talking to Drew with the Stanton situation on Friday night.
Yes, Drew. Okay, time back on. Thank you.
I mean, Clokey would get, yes, what number is he, Clokey?
32.
Yes, number 32. Oh, he gets yes, Drewy. Yes, yeah. Drewy.
No, thank you.
It's called a rapport.
Well, they're incredible figures. So 32, 44, 37 and 41 since 2011.
He's getting a rough trot this year, though, isn't he? Nine in seven games.
Yeah, but one that turned the match on the weekend.
Pete, we're a bit unfair.
No, we're not. The figures, stats tell us everything in this game, Peter, and Drew Petrie's the darling of the competition.
Oh, you're wrong.
Wanted to talk about Head High as well, yeah, because it obviously made the news. Friday Night Footy always does this. Lindsay's been doing it for a long time, and
yep,
when I say doing it, he's been getting a lot of kicks for Head High contact,
yep,
specifically in the tackle. I personally think, I don't like his technique, Drew. I think he draws them. I think he puts himself at risk, and I don't think he does it in the absolute technical spirit of footy. He uses the rules to his advantage, which I understand.
Yeah.
But I'd love your point of view.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Pete, I'll ask you this question. Was Lindsay Thomas the first player in the last 3 or 4 years to start this style of drawing free kicks?
No doubt. Luke Shuey, Selwood brothers, Joel and Scott. I mean, it's pretty much, not an epidemic, but it's pretty common.
So everyone, is it reasonably fair to say everybody's doing it?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, it's certainly something that there's not one or two players.
Particularly small forwards. And yeah, I don't want to just highlight Lindsay, but he's a reason why it's in the news.
Yeah, I'm happy to acknowledge that Lindsay's
Ben McGlynn
is winning the footy. He's winning the contested footy. So the onus, and I'm using a bit of what Brad Scott said after the game, the onus is on the tackler to lay a fair tackle.
Yep.
And if we can exploit that, then let's do it.
Should the AFL change the rule?
No.
If you drop your knees, I think there's high contact.
No, there's a difference. There's a difference of blokes leading with the head, using their head as a battering ram.
I'm not talking about that.
If you lead with your head, use that as a battering ram, you should not receive a free kick. If a tackler tries to tackle you and you shrug your shoulders or you raise your arm to slip their arm up around your throat,
yep,
I think that one's fine.
And if you drop your knees, that's what I'm talking about specifically.
Dropping your knees.
It seems to me that Lindsay Thomas, just watching him specifically, so yes, a lot of them do it. Luke Shuey, whoever does it, Alan, yep, Christensen,
Paul Pioppolo,
they search for the opposition's shoulder now. They go searching with their neck for the opposition, sort of armpit is what I'm talking about, to try and drive into that space. And they have to drop their knees to get into that space. And the reaction of the opponent seems to indicate to me that players hate it.
Oh, it's very frustrating. I remember playing against sides. I won't name any sides because I'll get criticised for it, but playing against lots of sides who have really good players that do it really well, and it is
West Coast
so annoying.
It just
drives you mad.
Yeah.
It does, because you think you've done everything right and you give away a free kick, but everyone's doing it, so it's one of those ones, if you can't beat it, then join it.
Yeah, I don't think Lindsay Thomas did anything wrong on Friday night that was inconsistent with what the rest of the competition does.
Nor do I.
But I reckon his brand over the years, and I hate using the word brand in relation to a person, but what everyone perceives Lindsay Thomas to be, because he did have a habit of overstaging for free kicks, so he's going to have to live with that now.
So we thank our friends at Champion Data for these statistics, by the way. They've been taking free kicks for Head High in the tackle since 2013. Individually, Joel Selwood's received 85, Alan Christensen 41, Paul Pioppolo 40, Anthony Miles, interesting case.
Yeah, it is.
39 from about 30 matches.
That's right, yep.
My understanding is he's averaging 1.7 head-high contact free kicks
per game.
And
he's first in to get the footy.
Yeah, understand that.
And so is Lindsay.
But this is exactly
my point.
Trent Cotchin with 34, 33 for Lindsay Thomas, which is way down on what people would expect, I reckon, particularly with the conversation post-Friday night. Brent Stanton, 6. 137th in the league. But these free kicks have gone up.
So he's received 33 in the last, so season 2013, 14, and 15. So that's about 50 games. So he's receiving less than one a game.
So Jen Phelan's done a wonderful article on this. If you go on the website, which you should be on listening to this podcast anyway, but on afl.com.au, these are all broken down, give you some averages per game as well. Jen's done a great job, and a great job to Mirrors as well, our fine producer, who, to be honest, did this to line Lindsay up because he knows you're mates with him and he wants to do everything he can to upset you this week, Drew, and he just failed on that one. But great stats as well. But I'm not criticising Lindsay Thomas or Trent Cotchin.
With respect, you did at the start.
Anyone. What I'm saying is, for the game itself, for the virus, it's not good. You're using it to their advantage, and well done for that. It's sportsmanship, like we spoke about, Drew, jumping 6 metres when Joe Danaher put a breath on him in the last quarter. But is it good for footy?
I don't think it is.
And it is becoming. Yeah. It's in the state. There's more free kicks paid for high tackles this year, Drew, than any year over the past 3 when stats have been counted.
But not by much. Yeah, you're talking decimal points. At the moment, the rule is black and white for a head high tackle.
If you want to
start trying to talk about spirit and what's not the right tradition of the game to play, if you want to start adding those into how umpires are meant to judge rules, then you're going to get even more confused umpires. At the moment, the rule is black and white. If you tackle someone high, it's a free kick to the person with the footy. So
that's fair enough, but it detracts from the spectacle of watching the game.
Yep.
I hate it.
If you want to get out there and the AFL wants to say, look, fellas, let's encourage each other to not... Blokes aren't going to...
Well, I think if they're going to stop it, there has to be a cultural reaction somehow. So I don't know how that happens.
Well, you're not going to get 850 players agreeing to stop playing for these high tackles.
No, but you can ridicule them to the point where they actually...
Yeah.
I mean, that's where what we're talking about in some respects.
And which what people are doing.
At AFL Exchange, if you've got a view too, we'd love to hear from you wherever you're listening right around the world. Pete, one of the great reasons of having you in is because this week in particular, with the heat on Mick Malthouse and the Blues going like a busted you-know-what, and the heat that's on Mick, I reckon, Drew, when you scratch the surface of footy, you find a real lack of sophistication at times. And this Malthouse conversation that's happened this year, this Carlton conversation this year, is driving me up the wall with the amount of idiocy that we hear coming from people who pass themselves off as experts.
Any names?
No. Because
What
I don't want to do is fall in a flood of fools, if you know what I mean, who are all drowning together. They're all drowning together in idiocy, Drew. But the conversation around it, the lack of sophistication, great thing about Pete, is this idea that Mick Malthouse will quit after 30-odd years in the game, 717 games as a very, very successful AFL coach, a mentor, a leader of men, and he's just going to walk away now at the end.
Yeah, he won't. Let's face it.
I don't know him.
But the thing, one of the interesting things, I spoke to someone at Carlton today, and they said, you know, it's a bit flat, but the mood's getting better. But they did make the point that Brisbane looked the most horrific team of all time 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now, admittedly, they came up against Carlton. But things turn.
Mightn't help their argument.
No. But things do turn. And that's what a person who's been in the game for as long as they have, like Mick Malthouse and like some of the experienced players, Judd, Gibbs, they know that you go through periods where things are misfiring that aren't anywhere near as bad as what you're capable of.
And not just those couple that you mentioned, but Andrew McKay and Rob Wiley and people who have been around footy for a very, very long time. Yeah.
One of the things you wanted me to mention, Drew, or we discussed, was back in 2009 with Mick under similar heat in terms of losing his job.
Collingwood. You'll be reticent to say this, Pete, but you spent the year embedded with the Collingwood Football Club.
Well, it's a long time ago now. So
what year was that again?
2009.
Yes.
As a journalist, you shared time in the coach's box with Mick on match day. You were in all or most of the meetings. You've seen Mick in the back room. And I thought what you could bring to us is a little bit about the bloke, because what we've got at the moment is
a lot of people in the cheap seats.
I'll
take you back to this time, which was an interesting three. Collingwood's won three games, lost five, heading to West Coast. They've got no Thomas, no Didak. People are hobbling around the Westpac Centre in moon boots, and it was a disaster. He was out of contract. The pressure was building in relation to the public comment outside, similar to this. And he got everyone in the football department in a room, which was the theatreette, basically, and gave an unbelievable speech in about, I don't know, it was a Thursday morning or something, about everyone being in the boat together and that we're all going to work our way through this, and it wasn't about one person, and it wasn't about... He had faith in all the players, and he went through players and told them what they were good at, and that the team that they were taking to West Coast would consist of these players and what they were capable of doing, and then went over to West Coast, had a migraine, I think, on the day, and was, you know, definitely under the heat. There were no board members travelled to the game. And Mick coached, I think Mark Neal was in the box and so was Carousella and so on, said it's one of the best performances they'd seen on match day. He just coached with precision and carefully and not the usual emotional Mick, which was interesting. And Collingwood won that game without all those players, probably five or six first choice players. They won their next 14 in a row or 13 in a row to go into a prelim, and then they won a premiership the following year. And at 3-5, they were in enormous trouble, and Mick Malthouse wasn't looking likely to keep his job at that particular stage, certainly in his own mind, if not in reality. So it was a great insight into the capacity of him to actually just not yield to external pressure or external voices and actually focus his energy on what was in front of him and what had to be done at that particular time. It's a slightly different scenario now, because certainly the expectations around Collingwood that year were they were a top four team, and the capacity for them to beat West Coast was apparent. But that ability to actually marshal the troops was evident there. I mean, similar situation.
This is what I don't understand, a major part of what I don't understand about this whole conversation about Malthouse and whether he should keep his job or not. This is a man with a fair resume behind him. This is a man that's built lists and been at the very bottom and built them back up and done it pretty quickly at times. And sometimes it's taken him some length of time as well. But does it not astound you, some of the commentary that's going on?
Some of it does, but I also think that every situation has to be dealt on its merits.
Yep.
And I must confess to not knowing with great detail the machinations at Carlton at the moment in terms of the players and the board.
So I appreciate that.
Yeah. So the opinion-based commentary surprises me, and I mean, I don't read a lot of it, but some of the relation to list management and the way Carlton's been developing their lists, we've been hearing that for a couple of years, that they've been way behind what the other clubs are doing. And a coach is dependent on his list.
So what do you make of his mood, at least publicly, at the moment? He does media. He speaks to 5AA in Adelaide every Tuesday night.
Yeah.
He's spoken at length about his situation.
Yeah, I think he's made it clear what's happening. I mean,
about the man you know, though?
Oh, well, he'd be... some people would be disappointing him at the moment, but others would be he'd be just taking it as it comes and focusing on his team,
basically. I mean, more about what you're seeing in his conversation, in his approach to it all.
I think he's not fighting the commentary. He's just steeling himself to focus on the job at hand, is what I'm getting.
So some people are saying that he looks resigned to the fact that it's over.
I don't think he looks resigned. I think he's just not entering into that fight, because what's the point of entering into that fight at this particular stage? He's got to focus his energy on the players.
We often talk in the media about the players wanting to play for the coach.
Mm.
How much credence do you give that?
Well, they say you either play for him or in spite of him. I'd say in this instance they'd be wanting to play for him, given the level of respect.
So what does that mean? Do you run for a hardball get and think, I'm doing this for Brad, or I'm doing this for the footy club, I'm doing this for my mates, or is it a mixture?
I suppose firstly, you want to do it for your teammates.
Yep.
But after that, a close second to be the coach, because he puts you in that side, he backs you in, He pumps you up, like Pete said, just about the Collingwood speech he gave in 09. He tells you what you're good at. He tries to encourage you. He tries to give you confidence. He wants to make you a better player. That's what he's there to do. So comes a point when the front man who cops all the criticism after each game, you want to be able to make him have a week where he doesn't have to after a win.
So I think I could talk... Sorry, Pete.
Well, I was just thinking, watching him, if they can turn it around and snag a win in the next couple of weeks... I mean, he just sit back and wait for the voices to come in some respects. There's no point him entering into the fight. It's like a good politician. Just let people keep talking and then have it out with them when you're in a stronger position.
The thing as well is with the general public, and some of our listeners probably get drawn into this as well, is that the mainstream media is what set the agenda, and they're all bashing him at the moment. But sort of how you spoke of him then made me think twice about the situation and how he's just absorbing it all, not fighting back at the moment, but where he's putting his energies, and I think you summed it up really well.
This is a concerning thing for me, and this will show whether Carlton, the hierarchy at Carlton, are strong or they're weak. Momentum's a massive thing, not just on the field, but off the field in football. The momentum's against him. The momentum is that Carlton will buckle. The momentum probably suggests that they've already made their decision.
The momentum is definitely against him, and... definitely, if you are putting money on it, you'd put money on that outcome that everyone's predicting. But things can turn really quickly. That's the issue in footy that they know well better than I do. And Drew's the same. I mean, you know things can turn quickly.
We did a survey on afl.com.au before last week's loss to GWS. And I think about 65% from memory of fans, whether they were Carlton or not, said that they think that Moldau should be given an opportunity to build the list. That's Carlton's job, of course, and like you say, Pete, we're not in there. We don't know what's going on.
Well, I think the other issue is crowds. If they start to drop away in the financial and this, that's when your momentum really swings against you.
At AFL Exchange, love to hear your thoughts. Should Mick continue? The Blues are basket case. At AFL Exchange, give us your views. Going to take a short break. Catch our breath. Petrie's Point is next. With the 277-game superstar from North Melbourne, Drew Petrie. Peter Ryan's in the house as well. Matty Thompson having a break. Andrew Lowther with you. It's time for Petrie's Point. What do you got for us this week, Drew?
Well, this week I'd like to speak about footy club culture, a bit of a buzzword that we hear thrown around a lot about football clubs and who's got the best culture and does a good culture translate into success on field. We hear about the Sydney Swans and the Bloods and North Melbourne and the Shinboners back in the 90s, and I got a bit of a taste of that at the back end, or the start of my career and the back end of that successful 90s period that the Kangas had. So footy club culture, it's basically just, culture to me is a group of blokes respecting each other, getting on well enough together to perform on a weekend, following team rules and doing what they've got to help their team win. I've heard Brad Scott speak about the Brisbane Lions sides of the early 2000s that won the premierships, and that he speaks about Acker sometimes and how that Acker was flamboyant and an extrovert and all those sorts of things, but he speaks really well of Acker, and he was a player who conformed and played his role for the side and did his job in that team. So to me, that sort of culture of having a team that is able to gel on a weekend, that's what you need to create. Now, you don't have to be best friends off field, but if you have enough respect for each other and you could create a good enough environment to perform on the weekend, that's good culture to me. Now, culture's changed a bit in my time. Often culture was getting the boys together and having a beer at the pub, but that's how you created good culture. That's how you created mateship and trust and built relationships and friendships. It was by doing that. There's less opportunities to do that now because, you know, we don't go to the pub as often, but there's more time at the footy club. So that's the time, and they're the places where you need to be able to build that trust with each other. Now, culture is set by the captain and senior players. I don't think it's the coach who sets the culture, because the coach is there to instruct and to help you perform on the weekend, but he's not there in the locker room, corridor, hallway moments when you knock around with the rest of the boys. So the culture is set by the captain and the senior players. I just wanted to ask Pete or Drew your thoughts. Do you believe culture holds any kind of significance with teams these days, or is it a bit of a mythical word that we like to use when a side's going well? Gee, their culture must be good. Again, using the examples of what was said about Sydney and the Roos of the 90s.
Let me say, Drew, I think there'll be people out there saying, what a load of rubbish, culture. But I believe it's something that if you decide to harness it, then it can absolutely work for you. It can fail for you quite significantly as well. In our workplace, Peter, we have one. I think it's something that we concentrate on. We want to create a good environment, an environment where we help each other, we can all grow, all those sorts of things, which I think is the same as culture.
I think I think culture is a difficult thing to actually meet. I mean, if you talk to some people that have been at the Sydney Swans, which is renowned for their culture, there'd be people who have left that club who aren't as glowing in their praise because they certainly didn't feel like the culture necessarily fitted with their way that they would develop or improve. But it was a culture that was probably geared to success on field, which is what a footy club's all about. Yep. But it doesn't necessarily make it a place that they thought was a fantastic place to be around. And then there's obviously other players, which is possibly the majority, who, you know, obviously have had success and really flourished in that environment and think it's a great environment. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Footy clubs are funny places, aren't they? There's people who talk about the culture, which are the leaders often. I don't know if you can ever have groupthink.
So if you had to choose one, and it was these two choices, successful team or better people?
Yeah.
Which would you choose?
You want to win as a sports person? Well, the club has said before for a lot of years that their job's not just to help us win, but it's to make us better people when we leave the footy club. And the club speaks to that often. I've heard that many times. I think through the 90s and the early 2000s when I first got to North, you had the off-field mateship and the on-field mateship. Now I see on-field trust and less, probably a little bit less of that off-field mateship.
But you had a very public instance where the club was ripped apart by your captain.
It was. But that was one individual that caused that.
But I imagine that took a long time to rebuild or not?
No.
Or did blokes like Glenn Archer step up and actually enhance the culture?
Probably in that sense, yeah, more so.
I mean, I think a successful club, let's face it, there's the pyramids of success in footy clubs, which is the board has to have a good culture so they're not, you know, they're doing what they have to do, which is strategise and not be fanboys, basically. Then you have an administration that's sorted and organised and all the players respect and trust and know their role and so on. And then you have the players that don't have to get along so much but just have to function really well. Yeah. And culture is about functioning really well.
So Jonathan Brown, you spoke about Jason Akermanis. I think it was Jonathan Brown earlier this year said that, I don't want to take him out of context, but to paraphrase, didn't love everything about him but he could play. So you're willing to put up with a fair bit. When you start to lose, it became a bit different.
Yep.
How do you harness it yourself, Drew? You're a leader at that football club, 277 games, nearly 400 goals, vice-captain.
Yeah, I think Pete's point about if you can channel it in the right way.
But is it natural for you? Are you just making decisions and leading how you think is best, or do you think about what are the things that drive us? Where do I go back to my North Melbourne template, or I speak from Drew Petrie, the man?
I think you change. That's another change that I've noticed is the young players are less inclined to conform to how things used to be done or how things are done when they get to a footy club. You've got to come their way a little bit now, which is really different. When I started, you conformed to how things were done or you were gone or you didn't get along or you didn't get a game. So now, as senior player, I've noticed I've got to come back a little bit towards this new generation. So the culture, the modern-day way of saying it, Pete, was to use your word, was creating a good environment. I think that's the way footy clubs have changed now.
But I imagine James Brayshaw is a part of that, and you can't do a lot about what James does. To use Pete's example of a stable board who has to make big decisions.
Yes, and they make decisions that do filter down to the playing group and set some standards.
Do the players take any notice of what senior people like James Brayshaw or your coach or your CEO say publicly? Do you think your players listen or care?
It depends what they're talking about.
I think I'd imagine if you feel like you've got a good hand on the tiller, they'll know if the president or the CEO doesn't seem to know what's going on. And I reckon the interesting one about saying the coach doesn't set the culture, people have said to me in footy before that the coach sets the personality of the group, which is an interesting comment. I'd imagine Hawthorn reflects the personality of Clarkson, and you know, Port Adelaide potentially reflect the personality of Hinkley.
I was just about to bring up the Hawks. They've got this wonderful mantra. It's later than you think. Posted around the club.
Yep.
Ross Lyon has some fantastic ones anywhere, anytime.
Yep.
About his team, particularly when he first went over there. We're a no excuses footy club.
One of Mick's one was know your role, play your role.
Yeah.
And Jeff Walsh is let the baker bake the bread, isn't it? That's one of his favourites.
Does the football club have one, an overriding one, Drew?
No.
Apart from kick at the Petrie. Don't give it the weight.
We've got a trademark.
Petrie first, weight second.
We've got a trademark that the players come up with posted around the footy club, which is something we follow by. We follow. And the coaching staff follow that as well.
Do you want to share it with us?
No, not really.
Sport, it's taken too seriously. We're going to have a look at the games next. You're with AFL Exchange right across the world. Andrew Lowther, Drew Petrie, Peter Ryan. We're going to have a look at what's going to be a big round eight. Now, I've got to remember this, boys, wherever you are, on the bus, the ferry, the train, the car, the bike, on the treadmill. I don't think Matty says that because he's never seen
that's
one.
New.
Out for a walk, walking the dog, patting the dog, sitting on your couch, whatever you're up to.
Or at work, just listening to us.
On the V-line.
Give us a five stars or don't at all. We love your company. And remember to tweet us at AFL Exchange. Now, I've got the pleasure of hosting in Matty's place. And the way it's going, he probably won't get back, I reckon. But Matty doesn't have to give much expert analysis. I fake it every week. I'm no good at it. I'm handing it to you guys. We're going to look. Huge round eight. We're really starting to get into the meat of the season, Peter Ryan.
Yes.
And I'm going to put this to you first, Pete. You write a stats piece on afl.com.au. It goes live every Tuesday morning. You've had some fantastic looks at some individual players and some clubs this year. Travis Cloak, my favourite so far of the season. Trent Cotchin still making waves. Your analysis of their games. And you pulled apart the Port Adelaide game. And there's some fascinating stats around Port Adelaide. It's the last game of the round, but we're going to start with that this weekend. So Port Adelaide take on Richmond. I haven't got the times in front of me. Matty always reads them out. It's a twilight game in Adelaide Oval.
And it's probably, if you are Richmond or Port and you lose this game, you are looking very shaky for the eight. I know that's a huge statement in round eight, but just in terms of your form and your capacity to beat sides above you. Port Adelaide, I had a look at them, obviously, after their loss to Brisbane. I realise now that they've only won 9 of their last 21 games, so they're
Port
in a
Adelaide.
Bit of a trend. Yeah.
Really?
Which three out of the first seven this year, you thought, oh, well, they haven't started off that well, but they didn't finish off that well
last year.
So it's a bit true to form.
Bit true to form. Interestingly, their inside 50s, which Ken Hinckley's identified, differential. So they're scoring on average 10 less, not scoring, entering their inside 50 10 less times per game than their opposition, which is a huge break. And they're not locking the ball in their forward half, which is a little bit to do with the fact they're not getting an inside their inside 50. But they're basically, they've gone from the second highest score in the AFL last year to the 12th. They're creating, I think, 37 stoppages a game in their forward half compared to 40, which was the top ranking in the AFL last year.
Well, he's got his article in front of him.
Yeah, I have.
True. This is Matt Thompson type stuff. Yeah, Matt is with us in spirit.
Me.
Mm.
Yep.
Well, that's true, but if I'm asked to speak about Port Adelaide, what the hell am I going
to
talk about?
Listen to you. You've got to be ready for some of this stuff, Pete.
Yeah.
It's very good analysis.
I spoke to people when I was doing the article, and one of the things that they put up, which I'd be interested in Drew's opinion on this, Paddy Ryder is in the forward line now, and whether the introduction of Paddy has upset the apple cart to the extent where Schultz is not able to settle in his role, Westhoff is less of a floater, and Lobie is having a change in the Ryder. How much of an impact is one player coming in, which you've got Jared Wade, obviously.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised about... Yeah, I was waiting for you to pipe up there.
I heard you on the, when he got reported, you were yelling out, that's a week, give him a week.
One, I wanted him to have three. Yeah. That's interesting because you'd think by the acquiring Paddy Ryder, you think improvement.
No,
automatically you think improvement because you've got another good forward, another tall who can mark the footy, another athletic, and he played a pretty good game in the elimination final that we
good
played
player.
Against him last year.
Oh, he took a big
not
mark
working.
And wheeled around and kicked a sensation. Blake on the mark was asleep in that game, by the way.
That was right.
Oh, was it?
But that's really surprising.
Well, it's just an opinion of an opposition analyst who knows footy pretty well, and they were saying that that's where you'd start to look at what might be upsetting. Obviously, the other point was Ollie Wines has missed a lot of footy, and Pollack's run is being missed. So, and the old chestnut with footy clubs that we often overlook in our analysis. Some players are just out of form, like Hamish Hartlett's not going quite as well as he was.
Yeah.
Pittard and Broadbent are struggling. So those factors all combined, and you're struggling to win games.
So this thought of them being the fittest team in the competition last year, which...
Well, we spoke about this last week.
Yeah.
They've won one last quarter for the year.
Mm. Running out of puff.
Yeah, I think all clubs are fit, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, if your system's working and you've got good players...
Yeah.
Pete, a lot of people would read your stats piece every week. Take us inside. You just mentioned that you speak to people in footy. How many opinions do you canvass, and what sort of people are you speaking to? You're talking to scouts, coaches?
Assistants and opposition analysts.
And how many would you speak to?
Oh, well, for a story like that, three.
Right.
Just get a feel for it.
One of them's your nana.
Yeah, she knows. Well, my late nana did know a lot about footy, actually. But
Mum's a passionate hawk, isn't she?
She is a passionate hawk.
So that's a good person to
speak
to. My
grandfather used to walk around in the boundary line of Glenfrey Oval with his, holding the rug, and coins were being thrown.
They were good old days.
So good old days, eh? But no, that's how many people I'd speak to, because I don't actually pretend to. Stats can tell you anything,
yeah.
And these people are at the coalface, and they can actually tell you what they mean.
These opposition analysts, they're the people that you want to speak to, and like you are doing. It's hard to pick up a form line, because the last three times these sides have met, I'll include the NAB Challenge game, which take what it's worth. So Richmond won by 60 points. The elimination final, Port won by 60 points. And then round 17 last year, Richmond won by 20 points against Port Adelaide in round 17. So
saw Richmond on Sunday, and Cochin played the best game I've seen him play for this year.
Well, your article might have played him in the form.
No, there was nothing to do, but he did play the way he should play, which has been direct and winning the football and running hard forward of the football.
Yeah, it looked like he had influence on the scoreboard and metres gained and got past centre with his possession.
Correct.
So he took an inside 50, also marked the footy inside 50, which Deledio did. Deledio was moving okay as well for people who are worried about
looked
his
great.
Calf. He did look good.
Yeah, he's a good player.
So the people you speak to, Pete, and in your opinion as well, where are Port Adelaide at? Are they a top 14?
Adjusting to two things. Ryder, they're adjusting to having him in, but they've also got players in slumps. So Wines coming back might help Hartlett, might help the whole sort of system, because that's what footy teams are about, getting the system organised so that they're functioning correctly.
And sides might have worked them out too now.
They're closing the corridor.
Yep.
They're definitely blocking the corridor and stopping their runoff half back.
I must say the blitz they put on the Hawks in the first quarter a few rounds ago made them look like every bit the premiership favourite, and they played very well against you in probably... in the top three games of the year in round three. Drew, it was sensational. Tips, boys, Port Adelaide taking on Richmond.
Richmond by 10 points.
Yeah, Port Adelaide just.
Port Adelaide for me as well. You're doing tips for Matty Thompson, so you can go any way you want.
That's right, tip Richmond. He loves them.
He does. He's a Tigers man.
He's a Tigers man.
We'll go right back to the start of the round now. Friday night, all eyes will be on this one. Massive game for the Blues. It's Geelong taking on Carlton at Etihad Stadium. Drew Petrie.
Yeah, well, Carlton only had 32 entries inside their forward 50 last week, so regardless of the personnel up there, they need to get it forward. Much as you spoke about Richmond's midfield then, I think Murphy, Gibbs, Judd all need to get that footy running through the corridor. Yaron's run's been okay. He's a little bit off, down on confidence like the rest of the side, but we need those midfielders running the footy past centre to give Casbolt and others an opportunity. Liam Jones played VFL last week. He played against the North Ballarat Roosters, who we're partially aligned to, and I think he had a relatively quiet game from the reports I received back. Henderson, hamstring test, whether he plays or not.
Yeah, I don't think he'll play.
They need some potency up front again, so if they get that inside 50 count up, they need someone to be able to kick it and mark it too. Casbolt can mark.
Matthew Cruiser will come in and play forward, surely.
Yeah, that's a chance. Big chance.
And that's got to help. They've got to win the footy around the contest.
Well, it's first going back, though, since round one, 2014.
Yeah. Might just help them straighten
round
up.
Round one, 2014, it's been that long.
Yep.
These sides met twice last year, and the Cats won twice, but it was 6 points and 5 points.
Yeah, well, one game at least, Joel Selwood basically won it for them.
Yeah, it's a great game.
Yeah.
I think that was a Friday night at Etihad or Saturday night. Terrific game. There should have been a free kick to the Blues in the goal square late.
Correct.
Carlton fans will remember. 20 years since the 95 grand final. If you haven't had a look, we've got the video on the website, some highlights for that for Carlton fans as well.
Geelong get a few players back too. They're getting Mackey, potentially Kelly.
So Mackey will not play VFL and will come back straight into the AFL team, you think?
That's what they've suggested, and I think that might happen.
Hasn't played this year.
No, he played round one. Played round one.
No, he was a late withdrawal.
He played round one and he hurt his quad in the first quarter.
Andrew Mackey was a late withdrawal in round one.
Andrew Mackey played round one.
Wow. Wow.
I interviewed him after the game. So unless he was standing there in his gear as a late withdrawal and I was talking to someone else. Anyway, Andrew Mackie is likely to line up for the Cats.
We may need to go to the third umpire as we...
We've gone to the AFL app, which is a wonderful piece of equipment if you've never
been. I did say to my son the other day and wife when we were talking about football, and it's a similar situation. I sound grumpy, but I don't want to waste time.
He's not on my list, Peter.
I'm not sure Mackie played.
He was a late withdrawal in that game.
100% certain.
You've got it wrong.
Andrew Mackie played round one.
Round one, Andrew Mackie. He didn't change his name for round one.
No, who did they play round one?
Hawthorne.
Andrew Mackie. Replacing selected side by Billy Smets.
No, I'm wrong. It's round two.
Okay, well, you're filling in the Matt Thompson role perfectly, Peter.
That's terribly
embarrassing. What do the Blues need to do, Drew, in this situation? I don't think many people are going to tip them.
No.
What would you want to see from them if you're a Carlton fan?
Oh, you just want to see effort and intensity.
Do you give much credence to this idea of teams give more effort sometimes than not, though?
Consistency of effort's the hardest thing, is what we all strive for. It's easy to do it for 1 week or 2 weeks, or if there's a milestone or some kind of emotion around a game. To do it consistently, you just got to look at Hawthorn, Geelong, Sydney. The year's gone by. Do it every week regardless.
Tips?
Geelong by 20.
Geelong.
Don't have to give points, mate. You just work out who's playing and who's not.
I'm shattered.
The Cats for me. Mackie has not played this year.
Mackie played round two.
Mackie.
He might have played round two.
He definitely played round
two.
Mackie played round two and had 16 possessions.
And he did. He hurt his quad in the first quarter and played on. I apologise.
St Kilda take on Essendon on Saturday afternoon at Etihad Stadium. Some wonderful signs by the Saints, which just shows you.
St Kilda.
You'll be down on your knees and come back. But it's about time we gave some credence to the West Coast Eagles, who have been fantastic this year.
Yeah, I think you said Essendon. You said St Kilda play Essendon, but then St Kilda play West Coast, so you're correct. St Kilda do play West Coast.
Mackie,
you have to go back on the tape and listen to yourself tomorrow. You were wrong.
He's thrown me with... Sorry.
You have.
Yeah, I've thrown everyone.
Just a quick note for Prittis last week. Brownlow medal form, 39 touches, 7 tackles, 7 inside 50s. It's 14th first second, but... This game isn't really, Pete, matched up.
No, it doesn't feel like that, does it? I feel like it's an important game for West Coast. Obviously, every game's important, but that they can... They've almost got this reputation as flat-track bullies, and potentially they could come over and smash St Kilda.
Yeah, but last week they did beat... a couple of weeks ago, it was Port Adelaide.
Yep.
They beat them over there, so they did dispel that rumour or myth somewhat, but another win in Melbourne would certainly further that. They've won 4 in a row. Winning on the road a couple of times at Brisbane and Adelaide Oval a couple of weeks ago, as you mentioned. St Kilda are going to... Well, they're going to hope... Is Rewalt ruled out?
Rewalt, yeah, definitely.
He's definitely out of the game.
Definitely out.
Which is going to make it a little bit harder on Josh Bruce. He kicked 5 goals last week. He's been outstanding. Kicked 23 for the season. But I think if he's got a wingman there to perform that role with, that duty with, that'll help him get involved on the scoreboard.
Be interesting to see if they... played McCartan, unlikely, but it'd be interesting to see whether they go down that route again.
Yeah, he didn't. Yeah, he played 2 games earlier in the season. I remember a game against, I think it was at the MCG, we spoke about Paddy McCartan.
Friday night against the Pies.
Yeah, it was.
After Rewalt got injured in the warm-up.
Yeah. Well, these are the opportunities I'm sure he's wanting.
Well, West Coast backline, McGovern didn't play last week, did he? I don't think he did. So
I've got no confidence in what you're saying.
He probably did. He probably was best on behind Prittis.
No, I'm not certain who they all played any week, to be honest.
He mightn't have missed him 250.
Yes. Remarkable that West Coast did travel in as well as they are, I must admit.
Yeah, the injury list they've got.
Yeah.
Do you reckon Andrew Mackie saying that Pete Ryan did work at that game? He interviewed me after the game.
I doubt
it. West Coast are actually the opposite of Port Adelaide in that all their mids are firing.
Yeah.
So Shuey, Sheed is a young player. Mm. Gaff is playing the best footy he's played for a long time. They should win easy.
Yep. That's who you're tipping?
Yeah, West Coast.
Yeah, West Coast here too.
West Coast Eagles for me, but Saints fans, you've got a lot to like.
Yep.
GWS take on Adelaide, which at the start of the year, you would have passed this one by pretty easy, but there's a lot of interest in this, Drew Petrie.
Yeah, there is a lot of interest. I spoke of Carlton only having 32 inside 50s. That was against GWS. They had 80. It's got to be some kind of record. Incredible amount of ball. inside their forward half. Adelaide have never beaten GWS so far, but every single right for GWS to be favourites going to this game at Spotless, which they've learned how
favourites.
To win.
GWS against Adelaide.
Yep.
Against really?
Yep. Absolutely. Well, you don't think they'd be favourites
going
into
this game?
No, it
just is surprising. I mean, they're obviously in good form, but it just surprised me for Adelaide to be favourite. GWS to be favourite of any game against the top four, top six sort of team.
Part of the footy narrative at the moment is that GWS are a Monty to make the finals. What do you make of
that? That's right. I agree with that.
Really?
Yep.
I did the final.
Monty, actually, let me backtrack a little bit. They're a young side, so you never know when that sort of lull's going to come, which inevitably it will.
Yep.
And it'll how long that lasts and what teams they're playing when
it
comes.
I'm with you, Pete. I'm not actually sure. I did a ladder predictor, and there's a lot to play out in this season. I'm not sure that GWS will even make the finals yet, but they're playing very, very attractive football. Mm. Who's their best player, Drew?
GWS.
Well, Jeremy Cameron? Adam Treloar?
Yeah. We've got Cameron Cameron. Shields, you think?
Their best.
Who's been their best
midfielder?
It wasn't last year, I don't think he was their best. Maybe this year's been their best.
Josh Kelly's got 60 touches in the kneeful in the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
He might get a game this week, but he's out of the side. How good are they travelling if Josh Kelly can't get a game?
Very good.
Incredible names running around the kneeful.
Out. Yeah. Brody Smith out.
Yep.
I think there are a couple of really big outs for Adelaide.
Yep.
So if they're going to snatch a finals spot, these are games in round eight they need to win.
Mm.
They must carry
Rory
on this
Sloan's not playing.
Momentum.
Another one. Yeah. And Eddie Betts, don't need to say anything there. Outstanding.
That's the worry, though. I mean, who will they play on Eddie Betts? He's sure. He's a potential, but he's a bit loose, isn't he, for Eddie?
Yep.
Who have they got in the back line to play on there? I can see I'm laughing at the stun.
I wonder if they've ever, if the opposition sides have played sort of rebounding defenders on Betts, or whether they've tried just to play lockdown players and try to maybe expose him the other way. So he's sure as your man if they want to look at it doing things that way.
Yeah,
he's so creative around the footy at the moment. I think you've got to go the other way,
lockdown.
Drew. I reckon at the start of the match, at least you would.
Yeah.
You'd be so worried he's going to kick goals.
The other thing to say, just as an observer, how important is Mummy for that side? I mean, take him out of the side, and if they lost him, all of a sudden their finals look shaky.
So the Adelaide website did something that I really enjoyed this week, a video about coach sayings and also which coach, as part of their team, reckons he could still play. And they asked a bunch of the players. Jury, is there anyone at
coaches
North Melbourne that reckons he could still pull on the boots, no worries?
Well, Shane Watson, who played for Collingwood, he is probably fitter. Oh, he's not, because he's 10 years older, but he's in as good a shape as he's in better shape, I should say, now than when he played. He trains more, trains harder. He's at the gym every morning, Arden Street Gym, at 6:30, doing his weights, doing his cross training, doing his running. He's in good nick, so he'd be our man who could strap on the boots again and not look out of place.
Played State of Origin football too, Shane Watson.
Yeah.
Does Brad ever muck around, have a kick, take part in any drills?
He has an odd kick, but I think he stays away from it.
His shoulders are a bit.
Dean Laidley loved kicking the footy with the boys.
Right.
He was, but Brad hasn't been so much.
Now here's a question: we'd love your thoughts at AFL Exchange as well. If you're picking an All Australian team at the moment, you don't have to answer this, boys. But if you were, how many GWS players would be one in the squad of 40, and would make the final team? There'd be three or four, perhaps. Mm.
Callum Ward would be a certainty, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Your tips, boys. GWS v Adelaide.
Adelaide by 11.
Adelaide.
I'll go GWS. A bit of an upset.
I said by 11, didn't I? Sorry.
Thanks, Pete.
That's all right. Gold Coast taking on Collingwood Metricon Stadium. And if you're looking at the website, on Thursday this week, Michael Whiting, our Queensland reporter, sat down and did a long one-on-one, had a long chat to Rodney Ead about what's going on up there. It's been a season from hell. You'll get some answers if you're interested in the Gold Coast Suns on Thursday and Friday this week on afl.com.au. Yeah, tips?
It makes for a tight contest. Last two games played by these two sides, Gold Coast have won by 5 points and 7 points. So it makes for a tight contest against your Pies, Pete.
Yeah, I think most Collingwood supporters would remember Clinton Young dropping a crucial mark against Gold Coast last year.
Some Hawthorn supporters would as well, but...
I think Gold Coast can win, actually.
Yeah, it's one. Yeah, I think they might.
So Gold Coast have got, I think, 11 of what you'd normally say their best 22 out. They've got 11 of their best 13 out.
Cloak might get a few free kicks too this week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to keep an eye on. What do you make of the Pies, Pete?
Just going okay. Like, their effort, you can't really question. And the game against Richmond was a pretty good game. Yeah. Could have gone either way.
Do you understand a bit more of their DNA, what they're trying to do this year? I think that's a real factor when I watch them play this year.
Pressure.
I think in previous years, you looked at the Collingwood team and it thought like that the game style was get the hands in our best players, get the ball in the hands of our best players, and we're a chance. Seems like there's a bit more system and a bit more going on now.
Yeah,
is that
well,
fair?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it all starts with pressure and effort around the footy and gain territory.
They were keeping the footy in their half of the ground a lot more in their front, you know, first month, 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that's not a knock, by the way. That's just young players improving, becoming...
Well, I think the issue with Collingwood, as it was last year, is whether they can sustain that pressure over 22 weeks. And we've seen the last 2 weeks that if it drops off 10 minutes, the opposition smashed them.
Yeah. Collingwood, a good historical marker for what we're talking about GWS at the minute, aren't they? First half of last year, geez, they could do anything. They'll finish top four. Some of these fools in the quicksand, Drewy, saying that they could win the flag, and then what happened? So...
What is exciting about Collingwood is their stability at the moment in their back six or seven, actually, and they're all young, all sort of 50-game players.
Yeah, they'll be there for a while.
Gold Coast.
Gold Coast.
Collingwood, for me. You're tipping Gold Coast.
Yeah. That's what we said.
Yeah.
Oh, Collingwood for me.
Yeah. Andrew Mackie played round two.
Yeah.
Oh, quite shows how much I know.
Huge game at the MCG on Saturday night. The two grand finalists for 2014 come back and meet each other. For the first time this season, Hawthorn taking on the Swans. Big game, Drew Petrie.
Yeah. Should this game be played sooner than round eight?
If I had my way, they'd play on Anzac Day.
Right.
The grand finalists would take centre stage on Anzac Day, play the Anzac Day game.
So instead of Essendon and
instead
Collingwood?
Of Collingwood and Essendon.
Yep. Jeez. That's interesting.
Either that or they open the season.
Would have loved to have watched Hawthorn Freo a couple of years back on Anzac Day.
Yeah, well.
Ripper.
Yep.
Yeah. You make a good point there, Pete. Leave it with Essendon and Collingwood. Both of these teams had convincing big wins last week. Sydney got back to their ruthless best against Geelong after what was a pretty challenging, pretty tight opening up at ANZ Stadium. Luke Parker, brilliant last
good
week.
Good player.
Smoking hot.
Mm.
They'll have to keep an eye on him this week, Hawthorn.
Yeah, look, I think it'll be a ripping game. But both sides have been a bit scratchy in some respects.
Yep.
And they played in the grand final and they've probably got excuses to not be winding up right now, but they've had their moments.
Well, Drew Lowther, you touched on Hawthorn last week about them not going as swimmingly as people believe.
Yeah, and we got what we expected last week, and that was a team who came out with real hunger and something to prove to the footy community and played like they can play, which we've seen three times now. With the Hawks this year, four times, they're 4-3. This will be, I would imagine, the coach has been saying to him all week, you've got to get two in a row.
Yeah.
You've got to take in what you did last week and bashed up a pretty ordinary team against a real quality outfit. And I think both when they've been playing their better footy this year, not near their best either team, but both their better footy this year, the Hawks are going better than what the Swans are.
Yeah, I think that's right. Critically, they get Lewis and, I think, Lake back this week, which makes an enormous difference, particularly Lake against the Swans.
Yep.
Yeah, David Hale added an element, although Ben McAvoy went out of the team. But those three players, Segler, who looks set, and who looked set last year, by the way, and they missed out in the grand final, but certainly looks set this year, Hale and McAvoy. Hale came into the team, and again, it was against a pretty ordinary opposition in Melbourne last week, but he looked at home.
Yeah, coming back from adductor injuries, kick two, probably a nice kind of game. Got subbed out. Nice one to get back to the seniors in.
Gibson still get Buddy?
Yep.
Yep.
Buddy got an ankle injury, Drew. Are you hearing anything around the traps?
Yeah, I did hear a whisper. I've got a mate up in Sydney too who was telling me something of the similar belief. That his ankle was a bit proppy after last week's game especially, but there's no way he'd miss this one.
No, absolutely not.
Your male similar?
Oh, we're hearing that there's an ankle situation. He might have got a jab last week, I think, to play.
Yep.
And last week mightn't have been the first week, but if that's what he's playing on like one leg, no club in the competition will hope he's playing on two this year because he's gone up a level.
Yeah.
Mm. He's a better player now than he's ever been. Tips?
Hawthorn.
Yeah, Hawks.
Hawks for me as well. Fremantle take on North Melbourne, Peter Ryan.
Fremantle, North Melbourne.
Domain Stadium.
Yeah, it should be an interesting. This is a Fremantle would start overwhelming favourites. Their pressure around the footy, their movement of the ball seems a lot quicker and cleaner. The absence of Crowley, we've all had that discussion around their midfield just seeming to win the ball and use it at will.
Yep.
They've got a lot of talent, basically.
Yep.
And North Melbourne can move the ball quickly when they're going and get it out over the back and score. I've got no idea. I sound like trying to sound...
Well, you sound like you're sitting... This is what you do quite often too, Pete.
Yeah.
You sound to me like you're sitting in front of a player.
Yeah.
And you're just a bit wobbly.
I've made him nervous.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like people telling
I'm happy for you to criticise.
Things are happening. I'm not criticising. No, I think it'll be a great game, but Fremantle have the talent and should beat North Melbourne.
So we've been a bit seduced, haven't we?
did it hurt that much, Pete? Did it hurt?
No.
Didn't hurt, did it? That's fine.
We have been a bit seduced. The Western Bulldogs were fantastic against Fremantle last week and looked every bit a winner until about 5 minutes to go when Pavlich and Fife and these
guys stood up. Here's the question for you, Drew. How do you cover their spare? Because Michael Johnson was instrumental last week.
Yeah, he was. His ability to read the play, he took 14 marks, I think it was, last week. He just looks like he knows where the opposition are going to kick the footy before he's... their own teammates know where the footy's going. So he plays that spare role, much like Lachie Hansen does for us. We'll be looking to nullify that, along with plenty of other things against Fremantle. Fife, Mundy, the list goes on. Pavlich kick five.
Does everyone wish Todd Goldstein good luck this week?
Is yes.
Fun? If you've been watching Todd Goldstein play, you wish Aaron Sandiland's luck, because Todd Goldstein is in...
He's right, but I'm just
unbelievable
laughing at the earnestness which he said.
He's moving really well, Goldie.
Oh, he's playing sense. He's back to what he was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Probably better.
Yeah. Well, our skipper's going to miss with a crook thumb.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
We're going to miss one, might miss two.
Yeah, Ben Brown will miss as well. You won't want to say that, but he'll miss with a knee problem. It's interesting when you talk about Johnson, the decision of who comes in for Brown, we've been discussing it in the office this week, might have some say of what North Melbourne think of Michael Johnson and who'll play on him.
What do you think, though? Might have a defensive forward rather than going for someone such as Aaron Black to play that role?
I think it's a tactic they've employed well in the past, but Black, I don't mean to put myself in the match committee's mind.
I know
mind.
Who's in. I'm not going to tell you.
Well,
but who do you
I
think?
Don't.
You
do. I don't.
You don't?
And Black's interesting, given that I don't think he's setting the world on fire, but he might go home. You might get some currency for him in a trade situation at the end of the year.
I would have thought DeMont would be a chance to get another go, given
to replace
Swallow,
yeah, another inside mid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, they've got to replace Ben Brown.
Yeah, we need someone else. So another ruckman.
North Melbourne might decide that a ruckman.
No.
I didn't hear anything there.
No, I want to hear your tips. That's what I want to hear.
Fremantle for me, Drew.
Yeah, Fremantle.
But it's a depleted North Melbourne team that goes over there who found themselves just starting to win some really good hard footy last week, the Roos, I reckon, and looked a lot better. The best you've looked this season.
They did look a lot better, but they still haven't beaten anyone of note as yet.
Essendon take on the Brisbane Lions at Etihad Stadium on Sunday. Peter Ryan.
Essendon playing the Brisbane Lions. Brisbane Lions are well and truly back in form. That midfield starting to gel. Beams, having Rockcliffe back, although he hasn't done a lot. Redden, Lewis Taylor, I just watched, he was just back. That Zorko, that pace, overlap, handball. Yeah, they seem to really get it going.
It was back last week. Add Green, Robinson, Christensen as well. They're the players that have influence. When you get that six or eight players using their overlap hands, as you mentioned, Pete, Brisbane look a far better side.
Why did Joe Watson play forward so much against you blokes last week?
I couldn't tell you.
I wouldn't imagine you went into the game thinking that was going to happen.
No, not expecting that at all.
It was a lot of time up forward.
Was it? Yeah, okay. That's news to me. I didn't even notice from the game. We didn't mention that in the review or anything.
Essendon should win because of their spine is stronger than... And I know Brisbane just hanging on and they're trying to actually play a little bit wider and a little bit more conservatively going forward, so they'll go to the pockets rather than centre the ball and get it swept out.
Yeah.
But Essendon have just got more talent at either end.
Talking about
from
talent,
my point of view.
They've got a forward with prodigious talent who could be absolutely anything if he realises, if he understands... Well, what's the one thing you think of when you watch Joe Danaher play? What's the frustration, if there is one?
Timing.
Timing in marking contests, you mean?
Yeah.
He can mark the footy.
Yeah.
He looks to me like a guy that dominated underage level, which he did, who wants to take the hanger of the week.
Really,
it comes from behind the footy so often, behind his man so often. Mm. I reckon he's a frustrating guy to watch.
Yeah,
if he makes it, could have a Lance Franklin type impact on the game.
Oh, I think he'll make it. I think there's little doubt he'll make it as a footballer. He still does a lot of great things in games already, but it's only one or two. It's not consistent.
Give him time. Yeah,
I understand that. He's in his infancy. But there's some frustrating parts about his game.
I like what he's got to offer as well, in a big way.
Yeah.
This is the third year in a row these sides have met in round eight. There's a useless fact for everyone.
No, that's good. Should be on Anzac Day, perhaps.
Yeah. He got ya.
Essendon.
He got ya. Essendon.
Bombers for me as well. Last game of the round, not the last game of the round because Port Adelaide and Richmond are, which we've already discussed, but Melbourne take on the Western Bulldogs. Yeah. Melbourne, the way they played last week, Peter, and I've seen them a couple of times, I know you cover them. Jeff Kennett's silly comments aside, they don't deserve much conversation.
The only out for them was that it was the third week in a row that they'd met a match way, way better. Fremantle, Sydney and Hawthorn.
Yep.
Hawthorn on the rebound, Hawthorn ruthless. Melbourne nowhere near good enough to compete with them.
Yep.
And they got thrashed. The question and obviously is that Ruse...
So from watching that, Peter, that must take the energy out of your legs, does it? Or the energy out of your arms. It makes you can't run
well,
hard or you
I
can't
think,
tackle.
Look, I'm not defending Melbourne for 1 second, but I think if you watch any team sport and you're getting smashed, suddenly everyone looks slower and the confidence drops and they... Shoulder slump. Everything just seems a little bit too hard.
I'll pay that.
And they haven't really got a leadership core of midfielders that can turn the game the other way when the opposition starts to go berserk. They've just got just got the same sort of player. They've got Vince, they've got Jones, they've got Tyson who's struggling. They've got Jake Spencer in the ruck who's not a AFL ruckman. So they've got a lot of holes still.
Which comes as no surprise. What is perhaps surprising or certainly illuminating is Paul Ruse's comments and the way he handles the publicity around the Demons, what he says publicly. You follow them very closely for us here at AFL Media. What do you make of how he's tackling
the Demons? A little bit of it's just coaching, that he's trying to keep the confidence of the players at some sort of level. Mm. I mean, they could be shot to pieces if he went berserk at them. They've had enough of that sort of tough love in the last few years before Ruse arrived.
Neil renowned for that tough love.
Yeah, I don't think he held back on telling them exactly what he thought. And I think Paul Ruse, he gave him a spray after one of those three losses and was really obviously disappointed. And the other 2 weeks, I think the Fremantle, he was really disappointed and went berserk. And then the following 2 weeks, he's basically gone the positive path.
So, Drew, he said after the game, Paul Ruse, that he wouldn't show them the replay. Do you think that's... Would he show them the replay?
He may have shown them parts of the game, but... making your team relive a 100-point loss again. Like you said, Pete, probably can't take too many positives out of that.
I've a view that they're like a horse that's gone up to Group 1 class and it's just not up to it. And now they drop back a class and they might be okay again.
All right, I'm not sure we said this in production, but just keep it at footy. Tips?
Dogs. Bulldogs.
Bulldogs for me as well. They've been superb. We'll talk about them more next week when we have a look at round 9. A couple of things to get through, boys, before we say goodnight. Once again, thanks for listening wherever you are at AFL Exchange. You want to send us a tweet. Person of the week and big week for time. Peter Ryan, your person of the week.
Trent Cotchin.
Lee Adams at our footy club. He's had 11 weeks off since he received a concussion in the VFL.
Yep.
And he's had that many neurologists check out his brain and scans and meetings. He's going to continue playing, which is great news, and can't wait to see Patch back out there.
Absolutely. He's one of the great characters of AFL footy as well. Jack Zeeble for me. We'll keep it on North Melbourne theme. I reckon it's best I've seen him play anyway. Drew, last week, his attack on the footy, his way he won the ball inside and outside, his use of it. He played a coming-of-age sort of game.
Yep.
Great player to watch.
When will he become North Melbourne captain?
I think he will at some point, for sure.
Post-Petrie.
Post-Swallow, you'd say. He's our current captain.
That's true.
And it's a big week for
Andrew Mackey, likely to come back in the side.
I reckon I've just changed. It's a big week for you, Pete. You've got to get your stuff sorted. Now, it's a big week for the Carlton fans this week. Will they turn up to the Friday night game? It's a Geelong home game, but you've written this article. I'm going to steal. Geelong have offered buy three tickets and you'll get a fourth ticket free. So buy three, get one free for the Carlton fans if you turn up to Friday night footy at Etihad Stadium.
So if you're in Melbourne or down the road or anywhere in country Victoria, and indeed right around Australia, if you want to come in from anywhere around the world, get a flight, come to Etihad Stadium. Should be an absolute...
Sounding more and more like Matty T.
Cracker.
The longer this show goes.
That's what I'm trying to do, Drew. Mm. What's that blown up thing you use that you seem to run around?
The banner we run through?
No. Everyone's chasing it on the field. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that?
A football.
There you go. That's my Matt Thompson impersonation. My big week four, you mentioned him before, Pete Ryan, Richmond Football Club. They want to bury some ghosts when they go and take on Port Adelaide, who have got a lot of reasons to win as well. What a fantastic player Jimmy Jess was.
Oh, I love Jim Jess.
Do you remember an old Could Have Been's Champion song about Jimmy Jess?
No.
What's your favourite Could Have Been's Champion song?
Oh, I don't know. Everyone loves the football.
No, you didn't get the radio up in Ballarat. And it's a huge week for Bendigo and Ballarat, who take on each other. Andrew Lowther from Bendigo, of course, and Drew Petrie from Spudville, Ballarat. So Bendigo have been decimated by injury. I imagine the VCFL, the Victorian Country Footy League, do it every year. They make sure that Ballarat gets something going for them.
Coached extremely well by Shane Scontra.
Scontra.
Good luck, Ballarat.
Hawthorn, Darryl Wilson and former Hawthorn Premiership player Rick Ladson coaching the Bendigo boys. Should be a fantastic game. Good luck for both sides, particularly Bendigo. Let's hope that Ballarat, per capita, the most tattoos in the country. Most tattoos.
Well, you want to explain what that is?
Like Desmond Tutu 14?
No, you call it a tattoo, Drew. Oh, anyway, great to have your company. Good luck. Enjoy your time in Perth, Drew. Pete, great to have your company.
Thanks for having me.
And great to have your company wherever you've been listening, right around the world, in the bus, the ferry, the train, the car, and the treadmill. We'll be back next week with more AFL Exchange.